It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Burrow Hill, where it's currently 34 degrees. 32 degrees out at the airport. No, strike that. Up to 36 degrees out at the airport, where they have northeast winds at 8 miles per hour. They're calling for more rain and snow today. The high near 36. We are there. East winds to 15, gusting to 25. Rain and snow tonight too, mainly before 9 p.m., then rain between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m., then rain and snow again after 3 a.m. tonight. Low around 35, and east winds gusting to 20 overnight. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough School District is returning to in-person classes, more or less. All-purpose vehicles will continue to be permitted on Kodiak streets. And Kodiak High School's drama and public speaking team, the Shakespeares, have notched another victory.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Ahead of consequential midterm elections this year, federal voting rights legislation appears headed for defeat in the U.S. Senate. The chamber opened debate today. Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says every senator should go on the record supporting or opposing the bill.
No one denies the path ahead is an uphill struggle. Republicans have been clear they will entertain no bipartisan compromise on voting rights. But long odds are no excuse for this chamber to avoid this important issue.
Democrats Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin say they support the package but don't favor changing Senate rules to get it through, leaving Schumer and other Democrats without enough votes to overcome a Republican filibuster, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
This is about one party wanting the power to unilaterally rewrite the rule book of American elections.
The Democrats are pushing for federal voting rights protections to counter a string of voting restrictions passed in GOP-led states. Momentum for changing election laws picked up after former President Donald Trump lost a 2020 race. Secretary of State Antony Blinken sets off on a trip today to try to defuse tensions between Russia and Ukraine. His first stop is Kiev, but he'll also meet his Russian counterpart Friday in Geneva. NPR's Michelle Kellerman has details.
The State Department says Blinken will meet Ukraine's president and foreign minister Wednesday and make clear that the U.S. supports Ukraine's territorial integrity. The U.S. says Russia created this crisis by massing 100,000 troops along its border with Ukraine and moving Russian forces into Belarus over the weekend. One U.S. official calls that a show of strength designed to cause or give pretext for a crisis as Russia plans for a possible invasion. The official, who asked not to be named, says Blinken will share his concerns with Russia's foreign minister Friday and see if there's any opportunity for common ground. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
The White House will officially launch its new website where Americans can order free rapid at-home COVID tests. NPR's Frank Ordonez reports the White House will prioritize shipments to Americans from areas that experience high rates of COVID-19.
The new website, covidtest.gov, went live a bit early in a beta phase at limited capacity, but its official launch is tomorrow. The White House told NPR early orders will be fulfilled, but that the first 20% of each day's orders will go to Americans living in zip codes that have experienced high rates of COVID-19 cases and deaths. President Biden announced last month that the United States would purchase 500 million at-home tests for the program. Last week, he announced he was doubling the order to 1 billion tests. The administration is also releasing a hotline number later this week for those who do not have internet access. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
It's NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Island Borough School District is determined to return to in-person learning, but it isn't proving as easy as was hoped. The school district initially planned to return to having all classes in person today, but staff shortfalls have delayed the elementary school's reopening until next week. The middle school and high school will be returning to in-person learning as planned, but Superintendent Larry Ledoux acknowledges that the situation is constantly changing.
We're evaluating the number of staff members who we know are going to be absent tomorrow for COVID or other reasons that people are absent. So we're taking a close look at that. We're looking, we have fewer subs available tomorrow than we had last week, but we have some staff returning that were on quarantine.
The school announced its closure last Wednesday as it struggled to staff its classrooms amid teacher absences spurred by the Omicron variant's arrival on Kodiak. It was the second closure of the Kodiak High School in 2 weeks. Ledoux says that school buses in particular are a problem this week. Three bus drivers are absent.
Anything's possible. It could be that some routes will be prioritized over others. It just depends on the availability.
On Monday morning, the school district reached out to parents of students in the special services department asking for families to voluntarily transport their students to and from schools due to bus driver shortages. All-purpose vehicles will continue to be permitted on Kodiak streets under new statewide rules that went into effect January 1st. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports that the decision came after a long and at times impassioned city council meeting last week.
Last fall, Governor Dunleavy's office announced that all-purpose vehicles like side-by-sides and all-terrain vehicles would be street legal in Alaska on roads 45 miles per hour and under at the start of the year. Communities can draft local laws opting out of that change. And Thursday, Kodiak City Council had a draft reading of an ordinance to do just that. But overwhelming public support for the new state rules caused council to indefinitely postpone the discussion instead. Councilmember John Whitten said that delaying the conversation would still allow council to act if needed.
There's a compelling reason to bring this back up for consideration, and whatever that might be, safety concerns or whatever it might be, then we can do that. That's still there. And again, that would be a full public hearing. We'd have full public input.
Fairbanks, Kenai, and Valdez have either banned or limited APVs on city streets ahead of January 1st, although Ketchikan City Council also recently decided to postpone discussion on restricting APV use within town. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Kodiak High School's drama and public speaking team, the Shakespeares, notched a win this weekend at a tournament in Anchorage. The team took home wins in seven categories and swept the dramatic interpretation and pantomime competitions. The Shakespeares are the defending state champs and are currently ranked number 2 in the state. They'll next compete in Anchorage at the end of the month. The Shakespeares coach, Jared Griffin, is a member of the KMXT staff. The Alaska legislature is supporting the lawsuit by university students against the Dunleavy administration to protect a fund that pays for scholarships. A joint council of the House of Representatives and Senate met yesterday, and they approved filing a legal brief backing the lawsuit. The Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund has held more than $400 million. Each year, money from the fund pays for Alaska Performance Scholarships, need-based Alaska Education Grants, and the state program for medical students known as WAMI. Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration has said that the money in the fund must be swept into a state savings account if three-quarters of both legislative chambers don't vote each year to maintain the funding. That vote failed last year. Kodiak Republican Senator Gary Stevens says emptying the fund would leave students uncertain about whether the scholarships would be available.
The medical students are on long-term program, and for them not to know from year to year how they're going to be supported would be quite devastating.
Dunleavy has said that he supports funding the scholarships. The Legislative Council's vote to support the filing was 12-1. Communities along the West Coast woke up Saturday morning to tsunami advisory alerts. An underwater volcano near the Kingdom of Tonga had erupted and sent waves thousands of miles across the ocean. Waves of just over 3 feet reached parts of Alaska by Saturday morning, but hours before those waves arrived, sounds from the blast reached the homes of many Alaskans, all the way from Juneau to the Aleutians. KUCV's Maggie Nelson has the story of that sound that you might have heard early Saturday morning in Alaska.
Iris Caldente and her kids were sleeping peacefully in their home early Saturday morning in Palmer when she woke up to loud, strange noises.
How I would envision Pearl Harbor sounded. Just constant boom, boom, boom. I mean, it was intense.
Could it be avalanche control? A burglar? Maybe the kids bouncing off the walls? Like many people, Caldente had no idea what she was hearing.
I went outside to check the cars because then I was like, well, maybe there's a burglar trying to get into our cars and they're opening and closing the door. Not a very good burglar.
Larissa Syverson also woke to similar sounds and vibrations in her home in Unalaska.
And I thought for sure, oh, it's my cat. Like, what's my cat doing? So he got blamed for most of it.
Like Caldente, Syverson was also confused about what the sounds were. First, she thought her cat, then maybe fireworks. Then she thought it could have just been bass coming from someone's car. While Syverson says she wasn't immediately alarmed and didn't go outside to see if there were burglars, neither she nor Caldente had any idea that the sounds were coming from an underwater volcano erupting in the South Pacific. What Alaskans heard early Saturday morning was an eruption so massive it sent sound waves and a tsunami throughout the Pacific. In Alaska, the largest waves hit the Aleutians and the Alaska Peninsula. King Cove recorded waves just over 3 feet. But the tsunami destroyed property in Hawaii and Japan, caused flooding in California, and killed 2 people when the waves reached Peru. Syverson says she saw on social media that people had posted about hearing similar things, and that the booming sounds were from a volcanic eruption near the Kingdom of Tonga.
To be honest, I still didn't even really believe it after that until I saw the satellite images of the actual eruption. I was like, oh yeah, that's probably what we were hearing.
But how did so many Alaskans hear a sound from so far away? The short answer is that this volcanic blast was so big it traveled thousands of miles. For the long answer, Ken McPherson has some good insight. He's a scientist at the Wilson Alaska Technical Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The Wilson Center has listening stations and seismic monitoring all over the world, and usually they're listening for something completely different. They're monitoring the world for secret nuclear testing.
And of course, those sensors are good at detecting things like nuclear bombs, but they'll also pick up any kind of atmospheric blast, a volcano being a good example.
McPherson says they pick up all kinds of earthquakes and landslides and volcanic blasts. He actually slept right through this one, but he says the listening sensor in Fairbanks picked up the blast. And it's interesting because those sensors are built for listening to frequencies that are lower than human hearing. Think of it like a foghorn. They have this very low frequency sound.
And the reason for that is a long period or low frequency signal like that will travel a longer distance. For higher frequencies, they attenuate, and that is they just kind of get filtered out by the medium that they're moving through.
Meaning a higher pitch sound won't travel as far.
But it looks like this Tonga blast was so big that even the high frequency signal that's audible to the human ear was able to travel to almost 6,000 miles to Alaska and be heard widely across the state.
Data from UAF researchers clocks the sound wave from the blast at moving roughly 700 miles per hour.
And so it still took a long time to get to Alaska because that's almost 6,000 miles away. But around 8 hours after that huge explosion down in Tonga, those sound waves started to arrive in Alaska.
McPherson says if he hadn't seen the data for himself, he's not sure he'd believe it.
And to be honest, when I first heard reports of, you know, this being heard, I was like skeptical of that. But it looks like it was possible to hear it, and the timing looks right. And so it does seem like it was widely heard across the state, which is just amazing.
McPherson says it's scientifically interesting, but it's important to keep the human toll of such an event in mind as well. What sounded like a loud boom to Alaskans can be devastating up close.
And you see that with, you know, bombs, for example. You know, they can shatter windows, or, you know, they can knock buildings flat if the pressure is sufficient.
And the true toll on the people on the islands nearest to the volcano isn't clear. Communications with Tonga have been largely cut off since Friday. Surveillance flights showed significant damage to boats and buildings along the coastline. The country's capital is covered in thick volcanic dust. And many people around the world are still anxiously waiting to hear from friends and family on the islands. With help from Rasha McChesney in Juneau, I'm Maggie Nelson in Unalaska.
Since the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation Board voted to fire Executive Director Angela Rodell in December, some state lawmakers have been concerned that the decision was politically motivated. On Monday, members of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee met with the corporation's board chair, Craig Richards, with the intent to better understand the decision. Richards maintained that Rodell was an at-will state employee, but declined to give details about why she was fired. A corporation lawyer noted that Rodell has talked about suing the board. Richards says the meeting with lawmakers itself was political.
You've brought up the chairman of the board to grill me pretty good, I might say, about essentially a personnel decision involving an at-will employee. So it's your right to do it, but it's a pretty, you know, there's politics going both ways here.
Soldotna Republican Senate President Peter Michicki says the corporation should be focused on growing the fund, and he said he's concerned that board members are straying from that focus.
Do we actively separate politics from maximum returns, which is your mission, your vision, because a lot of this sort of reeks of something else?
Michicki pointed to recent comments by a trustee as a source of concern. Trustee Lucinda Mahoney said she opposed an increase in the amount of financial incentives paid to investment managers at a time when the legislature has paid smaller permanent fund dividends than what would be paid under the formula in a 1982 state law. Governor Mike Dunleavy has proposed a change to the dividend formula that would make them lower than the amount in the current formula, but higher than have been paid in the past 6 years. Some committee members pushed back on this, saying that while the legislature is political by nature, the trustees shouldn't be. The fund has more than $80 billion. For more than 30 years, the main way money was spent from the fund was for permanent fund dividends, but since 2018, it's paid for most of the state budget, and the competition between paying for dividends and for state services has been controversial. Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz pointed to the large growth in the fund and pointed out that the corporation was recently named one of the best places to work by a trade publication.
It's really difficult for us to understand what is the problem with her performance if she's meeting all of these benchmarks.
The fund grew by $30 billion in her 6 years leading the corporation. Richards said the growth shouldn't be credited to Rodell, who didn't manage investments. While Richards didn't give details of why the board fired Rodell, he did say he was concerned by a proposal Rodell made a few years ago to combine her position with that of the chief investment officer. Quote, "That was the incident in which, for me, huge red flags went up," close quote. Richards said firing Rodell was appropriate. He pointed to negative reviews in her personnel file from some trustees that date back 4 years. Anchorage Democratic Representative Andy Josephson said Rodell may be able to win a lawsuit against the state.
"And I would rather have paid her to do the capable work she was doing than paid her through an operating budget in a case called Rodell versus Alaska."
Committee Chair Anchorage Republican Senator Natasha Von Imhoff said the committee would take whatever time is needed to fulfill its oversight duties as it continues to look into Rodell's firing. Richards said it would be best for the permanent fund to, quote, "move on," close quote. The first day of the legislative session is today. Stories shared through a University of Alaska Fairbanks program are airing on National Public Radio's Weekend Edition this month.
Originally performed in front of a live audience for the Alaska storytelling show and podcast Dark Winter Nights, hosted by Rob Prince, we thought they'd sound just as good over your dark winter morning coffee.
Stories, you know, about, you know, getting stuck in a blizzard on the Hall Road in a little tour bus, or fending off polar bears.
UAF Journalism Associate Professor Rob Prince and a small group of volunteers have produced Dark Winter Nights since 2014. A year ago, the program was on a New York Times short list of best winter podcasts. Prince says The Dream is a weekly nationally broadcast show.
Pretty much every day I check my email thinking, what am I going to get? Like the big email, like, hey, this is WNYC or something.
Prince says he also aspires to take Dark Winter Nights on the road. Its first local live show since the pandemic began is scheduled for February 26th at UAF's Herring Auditorium.
Insight Daily Radio. Conversations with today's most influential authors, actors, musicians, artists, and creative minds. Pop superstar Lionel Richie is one of the most successful recording artists of all time. His latest album, Tuskegee, is a new take on some of his classic songs, recorded with some of the biggest stars in country music.
Very few times in life you get to plug in a song that should have been his song all the time. Easy Like Sunday Morning with Willie Nelson is, I can't find a better custom-made song on the planet. He opens his mouth and he sounds just like Willie Nelson. The next thing is that he could be singing a classical song. He could be singing a pop song. He could be singing anybody's song. When he opens his mouth and sings, why in the world would anybody put chains on me? I mean, there was no more air in the room. His delivery was perfect. And then when it came down to the bridge, he said, now who's going to do the bridge? I said, Willie, I want to be high, so high. If I missed that statement coming out of your mouth, I would have missed half of the wonderful world that we live in. So I can't sing that. You have to sing that. I got it, Lionel. Don't worry about a thing. So it was probably one of the highlights of this album is to have Willie on it. Because to me, you know, this is the generation that I grew up in. To have him on there was perfect.
That's Lionel Richie on his newest album, Tuskegee. There's more online, insightdailyradio.org.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 18th day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:36. It will set again at 5:03. That will give us 7 hours and 27 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 34 seconds compared to yesterday. A record low for this date was 3, set in 1934, and a record high was 46, set in 1930 and in 2014. Currently 36 degrees right now, northeast winds to 8 out at the airport. We're looking for rain and snow for the rest of the day up until 9 p.m. tonight. Then it's expected to turn to rain between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m., then back to rain and snow after 3 a.m. East winds gusting as high as 25 today and coming down to gusting as high as 20 tonight. For tomorrow, rain and snow before 3 p.m., then a chance of snow after that. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 38, north winds to 20. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 1:52 p.m. That will be a 9.6-foot tide. That'll be followed by a low tide at 8:43 p.m. of minus 8/10 of a foot. Our next high tide will be at 3:17 a.m. and be 7.3 feet, and our morning low tide here on the east side will happen at 8:25 a.m. and be 2.9 feet. Over on the west side, you have a high tide coming up at 2:25 this afternoon. That will be a 14.7-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 9:14 p.m. of minus 1.5 feet. Your next high tide will be at 3:33 a.m. and be 12.7 feet, and your morning low tide for Larson Bay will be at 9:13 tomorrow morning and be a 4-foot tide. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. small craft advisory through Wednesday. For today, east winds to 20 knots and seas to 8 feet with rain and snow. For tonight, northeast 25 and seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, north 25, seas to 10 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight and Wednesday. Northeast increasing to 20 knots today in the Shelikof, seas building to 6 feet. For tonight, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet. And for Wednesday, northeast 25, seas to 7 feet. I have in my hand a notice of Kodiak Island Borough meetings. Tonight, Tuesday, January 18th, they're having a Fire Protection Area Number 1 board meeting. That's happening at 6 p.m. in the Bayside Fire Hall. Tomorrow, they're having a Planning and Zoning regular meeting. That will be happening at 6:30 p.m. and be conducted virtually. On Thursday, the Assembly is having a regular meeting. That will be conducted at That will be happen at 6:30 p.m. and also be conducted virtually. And on Monday, the Consolidation Committee is having a meeting. That's also at 6:30 p.m. on Monday and will also be virtual. Go to the Kodiak Island Borough website for a link. The Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will hold their next regular monthly meeting tonight. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. via Zoom. If you would like to sit in on the meeting, please call the station at 486-3181, or send us an email requesting access to gm@kmxt.org, and a link will be provided to you before the meeting. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is conducting research this winter to document the importance of subsistence resources to Kodiak residents. You'll need to stop by the Bayside Fire Hall tonight between 6:30 and 8 p.m. to pick up an information packet on local subsistence opportunities and research. Project staff will be available to answer questions, and outdoor refreshments will be served. Due to COVID, this event is an outdoor drive-through event, but the beverages will be available nonetheless. Call 267-2368 for more information. The Kodiak History Museum, Kodiak Arts Council, and City of Kodiak invite artists to submit qualifications to design an outdoor public art installation in downtown Kodiak as part of the Kodiak Asphalt Art Initiative. The artwork will be located in an area near the ferry terminal parking lot, including nearby crosswalks and sidewalks. It will connect the terminal and visitor center with the museum district. The primary goal is to revitalize an underutilized public space, creating a pedestrian plaza for visitors and locals to enjoy alike. The artist submission deadline is January 21st, so that is coming right up, as it is the 18th today. Complete details of the project and artist submissions process can be found online at www.kodiakarts.org. That's the Kodiak Arts Council website. Also, artists, it's time to apply for a Rasmussen Foundation 2022 Individual Artist Award. Competitive grant awards for Alaska artists include 25 project awards at $7,500 each and 10 fellowships at $18,000 each. It's for emerging, mid-career, and mature artists. The deadline is Tuesday, March 1st for online application. Paper applications must be delivered by February 14th, 2022. You want to apply online at rasmussen.org. That's Rasmussen, R-A-S-M-U-S-O-N. Go to where it says /IAA. If you need additional assistance, email arts@rasmussen.org, or you can call them at 907-297-2700. In addition, tomorrow is the Kodiak Arts Council's sponsored workshop on how to apply for these grants and awards. That's happening tomorrow at 5:30 to 7 p.m. It will be hosted virtually. And again, you need to go to the rasmussen.org website, that's R-A-S-M-U-S-O-N, and scroll down to the workshop registration links.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.